On today's episode of the Big Swing Podcast, we are throwing it back to May 6th and episode 16 with Gold Glove winner and potential MVP Cody Bellinger. In honor of the MVP announcement tomorrow, we wanted to bring back an awesome episode we had with Cody back in May and let you guys see a different side of this potential MVP. So I hope y'all enjoy it the second time around. Starting next week, we have all new episodes. We have some incredible interviews lined up, all the way from athletes to decorated war veterans to reality TV stars. So definitely want to stay tuned to the next several weeks coming up. There's some really cool ones coming. So as a reminder, if you're not already, please go subscribe to our YouTube page. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Big Swing Podcast. And please rate and review us below here in iTunes. It really helps out a lot. So I hope you enjoy this throwback Cody Bellinger interview, and we hope we have good news tomorrow when he wins the MVP. Here he is, Cody Bellinger. What's going on, swingers? Welcome to another episode of the Big Swing Podcast. On today's episode, we have Dodger slugger Cody Bellinger. What's up, bud?
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're in San Francisco, Coop. We just got done sweeping the Pirates and flew out last night. And man, we're lucky. It's beautiful outside. The sun's out, and we got Cody in here. So thanks for being here, Cody.
Yep.
First thing, as we should have, when we landed last night, we find a place to watch Game of Thrones.
Absolutely.
So, curious what your thoughts of that episode were.
I think we already talked about it, but I was a little disappointed. I think for some of the episode, it was a little too unrealistic for me. I think when the first wave of zombies came and it was like a whole wave of zombies, I was like, there's literally no chance that these guys can hold them off. And then like for 40 minutes, like Unsullied, right? It was,
yeah,
we're holding off like a whole wave of zombies. But other than that, the action was good. It was a whole hour of battling. I think Jon Snow should be dead about five times on an episode, but, glad he's alive, and yeah, it was good, but a little unrealistic, but definitely good.
Yeah, Coop, so, to set the stage for you, man, like all the armies that have been fighting each other for basically six seasons are now together to fight what is like a dead zombie army, and they send one of the good armies, one of the alive armies, like that are just, they're savages, and they have horses, they all have horses, yeah, and they send them out to face these White Walkers, and I'm telling you, dude, they die in like 3 seconds. Yet somehow the rest, it takes them an hour to beat the rest of the army. I don't know. It's just, you know, it's Game of Thrones. Everything they do is great. But like, we didn't get answers on who the Night King is at all. And we've all been wondering that for 6 years. You know, so I think there's people out there that are like, all right, whatever, the White Walkers are done. Now we're going to actually battle for the throne, which is the point of the whole show.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, we got no answers on what the White Walkers are and why they're so pissed at humans or anything.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
Yeah, so Cody, a running theme on the podcast is I don't watch Game of Thrones. So Ross basically gives an update every time. So is this was the like 45-minute fight scene everyone's been hyping up?
Yeah, was it the longest one?
Yeah,
was it
this one? Yeah, so it beat the Lord of the Rings, which was like 40-something minutes, and I think this one ran for maybe an hour or so.
Yeah, for sure.
Of just like, you know, technically the same battle from, you know, start to finish, and it took an hour. And it was exhausting. There's part of it where it's so dark, you don't even know what's going on. You're like, did that person die? Was that Jaime? Did he die right there? And then he comes back later, like, okay, no, he didn't die. And I still don't know how many dragons are alive.
Yeah.
Not a clue if there's two, one, three, no idea.
We
so,
had no answers.
You know, need some clarity, but overall, it's still Game of Thrones, so we love it.
Yeah.
So, another thing before we get deeper into the podcast, I just I asked a similar question to Jameson Talion on last week's pod, but we do a segment called the Beast of the Week, Cody, where we talk about like a top performer or something that we like from that week. And Ross and I actually unintentionally synced up and picked you as our Beast of the Week like 3 weeks ago. So
in the baseball world, or
it could be anything.
Yeah,
I mean, one time Cooper picked avocados.
Oh, okay. Like,
that was a beast of the week, an avocado.
I had Tiger's
but like Tiger Woods
was one. Last time. But my question is, is that a bigger honor or Rookie of the Year a bigger honor?
You guys, that's a close second for you guys.
Oh, man. It's disrespectful,
I appreciate it, though.
Dude.
Yeah.
All right, podcast over.
Very close, though.
Well, you know, on to more important things and getting into baseball. You know, here at the Big Swing, we don't believe in jinxes, so we won't, you know, we won't dive too deep. But obviously, just got to talk about the season so far, man. Yeah. You know, having an April that's getting compared to Pujols and Chase Utley and A-Rod and all that stuff, man. So, you know, without obviously jinxing or getting too much into it, just curious, you know, what changed, if anything, from last year to this year? What are you doing different? Anything in the off season? Just, you know, that kind of stuff, man.
I think that it's right now like a full circle. I think it was the beginning of the off season. I went to L.A. in January to start working with Robert and Brownie, which are hitting coaches. And I mean, I still have the video, but it was just like drills that are eventually going to help me. Like they literally were like step one, step two, step three, step four with me. And it was kind of frustrating because I wanted to know what I was doing right away. But it was like, you need to learn this before you learn that, before you do that. And which I was like, I get it. But like the first steps were like, you know, kind of weird and whatever. But yeah, it's just been like a evolution of like, and it's not really a big difference of what I was doing in 17. It was more like an understanding of what I want to do. And it's just like I have a routine in the cage every day. And like when I feel like I'm off, it's like, why am I feeling off? And they help me get back to where I need to be if they see something. So it's like I have two dudes in my corner that are really good and really smart. And then I also have an understanding of what I'm doing in my swing, and it's been good. And I'm still making adjustments, though. It's not like it's one thing that's been working. I've been having like constantly change little things, and I think that's pretty cool to see the results still.
Yeah, so it's been fun to watch for me, that's for sure.
So did
so Coop,
like...
we call this dude the Messiah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He's our new hitting coach. We call him the Messiah. I mean, he seems to have come in and just had an instant impact on a handful of guys, you know, and obviously Cody doing what he's doing. But
he's that really young guy, right?
Yeah.
He's like 36 or something?
Yeah, he's definitely young in the coaching world aspect to be like a head hitting coach for sure.
Yeah. So did you feel different, like as far as, you know, in training camp and like starting the season, did you feel like, all right, I'm about to go on a fucking tear? Or were you just, it was a sort of a normal experience for you?
No, I actually felt good in spring training, but like even the first 2 to 3 weeks in the off season, you never face pitching. So it's like all you're doing is hitting soft toss and hitting batting practice. And then when you get in a game, you know, it actually is completely different. So it's like you have 4 weeks, which is a long time in spring training. I think it's too long, but you use that and like eventually make adjustments from there. And like, how do I hit 95 right now instead of just batting practice? So you kind of make it your own swing, and then in the cage you fine tune it, but you just keep making changes. And I wouldn't say I knew, I felt good, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know what to expect.
I think it's funny, we've had a couple of hitters on the Big Swing, and all of them have said spring training's too long. Like every single one of them, it's like the first thing they go to is spring training's too long. Well, you know, another guy that's seeing it pretty good and riding up your coattails is the Yelich, you know, Christian Yelich from Milwaukee. We had a lot of people ask what you guys talked about when y'all met up in center field in Milwaukee a few weeks ago. Do you remember what you guys were chatting about?
Yeah, I do. I wouldn't say we're close, but I have gotten closer with him, and he's an unbelievable guy. He told me to, like, what he did last year, he said, you have to be so focused in the cage and in batting practice every day. And he's like, don't ever think that it's easy, because it's not. And once you start thinking that, then that's when the slumps happen. So he's just like, dude, focus every single day. And I mean, it was like, honestly, it was like a pep talk. Like, dude, you got to like be, you can be good, but you got to like stay with it. And it was pretty cool for him to come out and say that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet Jeter is regretting that trade, huh?
Man, there's a couple of those. Yeah, we won't get into that, but yeah.
I mean, I will.
Get a couple of those guys out of Miami and they take off. Yeah.
That's tough.
Well, so also a question a lot of people ask too, and I'm starting to think it may be true, but is the beard magic?
At one point, I was like, I got to keep this all year. But we got home from our road. Where were we last road trip?
We were in, oh my gosh, how do you even forget where we were?
You were
in Milwaukee and Chicago? Yeah, Milwaukee and Chicago.
Yeah, so we got back from Chicago, and we had the barber back in L.A., and I said, hey, I think it's time to trim the beard. It's starting to get itchy, and it didn't really look that good. So he's like, all right, whatever. I trimmed it, and then it was nice to get the first hit out of the way after you change something.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
And I also changed my helmet that day because we had to change helmets. So I was like, well, I just got to get a hit just to, like, reverse the why'd you change. And it was cool to get that out of the way. So I know it's not magic.
So it doesn't sound like you're very superstitious.
Yeah, it's just very trimmed up now. It's like a 2 or a 1 instead of wherever it was. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of baseball players are really superstitious, but it doesn't seem like you have that in you. Ross, do you have any weird quirks?
So technically, no. Like, you know, I don't, like, not wash my socks if I pitch well, or, you know, put my pants on the one way only every time I pitch or anything like that. I'm very, I don't, superstition is the right word, but I'm very, like, anal about my routine, like, almost to the minute. But I that's, like, basically learned straight from Kershaw. I mean, Kershaw's day is planned to the minute almost. So I've kind of adopted that and just, like, you know, day one after I pitch this, you do this and this and this, and day two is this, this, and this. And like that just kind of gets you in a right headspace, you know, I think, and prepares you for your next outing. But as far as like a true superstition, I feel like I've never really had one, which people ask me that all the time, and I wish I did, but I just don't. Do you, Cody?
No, I think I used to be more superstitious than I am now. And I'm really glad I got past that, because I think I, like, before a game, if I had a good game, I would try to remember, like, the playlist that I had and, like, listen to the same songs over and over and try to repeat the next day of, like, what I did, thinking that had any type of correlation to the game, but it really doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's, like, doing, like, what I want to do that day and what I want to listen to that day, and it changes. Like, sometimes I'll go reggae or hip-hop, like, it changes. So it's, like, I think that's good to, like, just do what you want to do that day, not focus on what you did before because it worked.
Yeah,
so
like Cooper, as a fan, I was gonna say, like, it's we have no control over the game, so I think it drives us crazy. Like, I'm generally not superstitious at all, but when I say that, like last night, 2 nights ago, when I was watching the Rockets game, I changed my jersey like 3 damn times, and I know it's not gonna do anything. I'm positive it's not. It's almost like it makes me feel better.
It makes it fun though.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you got on that, Coop? We can get your quick reaction. I saw just a ton of backlash on Twitter about James Harden getting fouled versus not getting fouled.
Yeah, I think what it is that's always drove me crazy about playoffs, and I think it goes across all sports, but like I just hate that the game's called differently in the regular season than it is the playoffs. You know, you get used to playing a certain way. Harden has a certain style, and he's gotten those calls all year, and he's made a living off of those calls, and when suddenly those aren't available to him, how do you expect someone to just totally change up their game when they're averaging 36 a game and expected to do something totally different? When he had 4 or 5 of those threes that he got fouled on, that first of all, you know, that's 10, 12 points right there. And second of all, that's 4 or 5 fouls in the first half on Klay Thompson. So it, man, it was bad. It was bad. A lot of that happened last year in the Western Conference Finals for us. And so it's just frustrating. I think Harden kind of said, you know, I just want a fair shot. And that's kind of how a lot of Rockets fans are feeling right now. So it's tough, man.
Coop gets fired up about the Rockets.
Cool. Yeah.
You live in Houston?
Yeah, lives in Houston, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's
yeah, so.
Because then, like, the strike zone tightens up a little bit in the playoffs, right? Wouldn't you say?
I mean, it shouldn't, but, you know. Yeah. It certainly can, yeah, you know, you sure. Never know, but it can go the other way too, man. It can open up, you know, that's what kind of keeps the human element into baseball is kind of the umpires. There's a lot of talk of going to an automated strike zone and that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, playoffs, everything gets heightened, man. I mean, I was basically left off a playoff roster last year because I was tipping my curveball with my mouth, which we'll get into at another point. I don't want to talk about it right now, but like, anybody can pick up on anything in the playoffs. Everything gets heightened. And, you know, obviously umpires, referees, all that stuff gets included.
Well, I think not only is it a pressure situation for, like, you guys, it's also, you know, these officials are a lot more nervous. The spotlight's more on them. So they're going to make more mistakes, too.
For sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, well, you know, speaking of the NBA a little bit, those guys can get drafted out of high school, or at least used to, you know, 1 year into college basketball can get drafted. I mean, Zion's about to be, what, 19 years old in the NBA. You got drafted out of high school. We've had a lot of talk on the podcast about, like, college versus high school, and some guys get fired up, some guys don't. We probably won't go down that road. What I want to ask you is just, like, when I was 18 years old, man, I was not in the mental headspace to, like, go play professional baseball or go live in a hotel in Arizona or whatever it is. Like, how did you do it at 18? And, like, what advice would you give if, like, let's say a kid is listening right now that is on the cusp of getting drafted or whatever? Like, what would be your advice on how do you be an 18-year-old kid and tackle professional baseball?
Well, I would first off say that it's not easy.
Yeah.
I think that if you go into it and think it's easy, I think then you're already going to – maybe it's easy to some players. I don't know. It definitely was not easy for me. I've never been in a locker room before because in high school you change in the parking lot, at least my high school,
yeah.
And then you go to the game.
Yeah.
So, like, to actually have a locker to go to and, like, sit at the locker and have a schedule to – do every single day, like the first few days I literally didn't know what I was doing. Like, I didn't know when to go to the cage. I didn't know, like, I was wearing red shoes and we're all blue, and I was wearing red New Balances, and
Dijon
yeah. said, yo, we don't wear red shoes here.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, but I had no idea, you know. And it was just like it was a whole learning experience. I struggled my first year getting, you know, fastball blown by me constantly, and but it was something that I really wanted to do. I didn't really want to go to college. And so I was blessed to be drafted. Logan White, who is now at the Padres, but he believed in me, and I owe a lot to him because he was literally the only person that would, like, meet my money requirement out of high school. So I owe a lot to Logan White.
Yeah, and at this, like, kind of the same note, you know, you were, like, 21 in the big leagues, living in L.A., you know, Ross and I were kind of talking about this the other day, but we, you know, we were in college. I mean, I wasn't playing sports. He was, but I mean, when we were 21, we were in college, you know, trying to make class on time, going to football games, going to parties, stuff like that. Like, it's gotta be such a different experience. Like, do you have any stories from being 21 in LA that you can share?
I mean, I really, like, I have never been out during the season, so I don't really experience the LA life, I guess, like maybe some people do. I would just say, like, the weirdest part was, like, sometimes in 2017, like, walking the streets, like, people wanted to take pictures, and, like, I wanted to go to Starbucks and just get a drink, but I had to take a few pictures, and it's definitely really cool. But yeah, I don't know, there's just a lot of Dodger fans out there, and but to say I have any, like, crazy LA stories, I really don't. I just go back and play video games and just hang out and keep it low key.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that we live, like, this LA lifestyle, or the LA lifestyle, you know, that you see on, like, the influencers on Instagram and going to Coachella and Stagecoach and all that stuff. Like, I mean, we play 162 games in, like, 180 days,
yeah.
And half of them are on the road. And I think last year we might have had one off day in LA,
yeah.
You know, so yeah, technically, you know, our game ends at 10:30. You can go out and go to the bar or whatever if that's what you want to do. But over the course of 162 games, if you make that your lifestyle, you'll never survive. You know, so, like, I don't really live that LA lifestyle, too. I've only been to the beach, I think, twice in 4 years.
Yeah.
I try and take my wife out to a nice dinner in, like, West Hollywood if I get a chance, you know. But, like, we're never, like, hitting the club scene in Hollywood or, you know, like I said, going to Coachella and all that stuff. Like, we're, you know, grinding through a baseball season. So, you know, Cody chooses to go home and you know, unwind by playing video games. There's a lot of guys that do that.
Yeah, I kind of have seen it with you a couple times, Ross, but we've been out somewhere and someone's recognized you, and it's always a weird feeling. I'm sure Cody, you know, no offense, Ross, but you're more recognizable than Ross is. So... But I remember we were out.
He has a beard now.
Yeah, it's the beard. It's 100% the beard. Well, we were out one time, and I remember we were talking about, we were talking about fantasy football for like an hour, and then some dude walks up, and he's like, hey, you were on my fantasy baseball team. And I thought that was so weird because, you know, I just don't see you that way. I just kind of see you as a buddy of mine. So it's super weird whenever that happens, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first, you know, couple times it happened, you're like, wow, that was cool. And yeah. Then now the idea that, you know, Cody – essentially can't walk down the street without taking a couple pictures. You know, it's obviously it is awesome, like to be recognized
sure.
like that is super cool. But then there are times where you wish you could just fly under the radar, you know. But we don't have it half as bad yeah. as like a Justin Bieber or yeah. a Kardashian or whatever.
Or like an NBA player.
Get a Chipotle burrito.
Yeah, the NBA superstars, they can't go anywhere. Or a lot of NBA players. So we yeah. have we're below them. But in Los Angeles, you know, there's a lot of Dodger fans. So
yeah. Cody, was there a point back, you know, let's say you're grinding through the minor leagues, and was there a point that you can remember, like, distinctively being like, okay, I can make it to the big leagues? You know, I remember seeing you as an 18-year-old kid. You were playing first base behind me when I was rehabbing Tommy John, and, like, you could see the athleticism, you know, and you could see the swing. Like, that's a beautiful swing, you know. But was there a point for you where you, I don't know, high A, double A, or whatever, where you're like, all right, you know, I actually have a real chance to make it here?
I would say my first big league camp in 2016. 2015, I had a really good year for the first time. It was my first full season. I went to Rancho, and I put up, you know, pretty good numbers, but it is a hitter's league by a huge margin with the fields and the wind and how it blows out in a lot of fields. And so it was good to get some confidence and, like, start hitting home runs, and you start hearing your name on the prospect list finally, and that's, you know, pretty cool as a minor leaguer. And then I went to 16 on the big league camp and, like, made some adjustments to the swing with our old hitting coach and was, like, feeling good, and went to double A that year. And everyone says that double A is the huge jump. So I had a pretty good year. It wasn't a great year. It wasn't a bad year, but I had a pretty good year. But I really didn't know I was going to be fine until you actually go up there and perform, you know, because yeah. you literally never know. So I think it was good to get some hits out of the way early.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think. Sorry, go ahead, Cooper.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you know, did you watch film on guys? Like, I don't know if you guys really do that. I mean, I was a basketball player growing up, so, like, I used to always watch Steve Nash and try to emulate him. Like, did you have a player that you looked up to? I compared you kind of to Griffey a little bit because your swing, you can kind of go get a ball wherever, and you kind of got that stand high lefty swing that looks like Griffey a little bit. But did you have a guy that you loved?
Early in the minor leagues, it was when the Royals were going to the World Series, and I saw Eric Cosmer at first, and I was like, this is like a athletic, not a huge type guy that's, you know, pretty good, really good defensively and can hit. And I was like, oh, that'd be cool to, like, kind of be like Eric Cosmer a little bit. And I would say he was, like, the one guy where I was like, oh, I can see myself being him because he's an athletic first baseman. And that was just the kind of guy that I thought I could be in the minor leagues. Yeah.
I never really thought about that. You are kind of Hosmer-esque. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to drive the ball out of the stadium, opposite field. I mean, he hit a home run yesterday on, like, a sinker off the plate down and away and hit, like, a laser out of the stadium in Washington.
I don't know how you track that one. I watched that game, and wasn't sure how you got to that yeah. one. But that's the type of stuff. And and Cody, you actually may be a little bit younger. I mean, it was kind of the tail end of my watching. But Griffey used to go get these balls anywhere in the dirt, up high, anywhere, and that was insane to watch him. And seems like your swing kind of mirrors him a little bit.
Yeah, I honestly don't think I ever watched him really yeah. play. I don't remember it, but I obviously have seen his highlight tapes on YouTube, and they're incredible. But unfortunately, I do not know, like, how he actually played in games, because I can't remember, and I don't know if I really watched.
Great
yeah,
video I watched game too.
Absolutely. Oh man,
I remember that.
Yeah, that was the best. I think it's crazy, you know. So, yeah, I was just a kid watching Griffey. I wasn't, like, diving into, you know, the analytics of baseball back then or whatever. But, like, you go watch him and you think about that swing, it seemed like he would have a giant hole somewhere, like that his stand up so tall and have such right. a giant swing that you could, like, pound him up and in. And maybe you could, I don't know. But, like, similar to other lefties, you think Bellinger, like, yeah, stands up tall and I wouldn't say he has, like, a crazy long swing, but he has, like, your standard lefty swing-ish where, like, anything down and in, he's just going to annihilate. But I've seen Cody hit grand slams on balls up and in at his chest in San Diego, you know, so there's nothing worse as a pitcher when you sit. Freddie Freeman is a guy that comes to mind where you sit to scout someone and there's nowhere to go, you know, yeah. and then on top of that, you're already, you know, really seeing the ball and having a great month, and you're just like, my God, like, if anyone's on base, what do you do? Like, how can you attack them? So, I mean, that's why I'm extremely lucky to have Cody on my team, and I'm not having to worry about having to get him out.
I got to figure that sometimes, what the pitcher's thinking. I think maybe you don't know how the hitter's thinking, but, like.
So, yeah. Cooper, you brought that up yesterday, actually.
About what the pitcher's
asking. Yeah, well, you were asking, like, yeah, if like a hitter thinks about what the pitcher's thinking, like what, who has more pressure if someone's in scoring position, the dude in the box or the dude throwing the pitch?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I always think about that. If there's, you know, guys in scoring position, you know, you're stepping up to the plate, there's obviously a lot of pressure on you to perform. But also, let's say Ross is on the mound. I mean, what do you think? Who has more pressure in that situation, you think, Cody?
I would say it all depends on the game. I would say guy in scoring position, I would say it's on the pitcher to not let that run get in.
Yeah.
I think, like, from a hitting standpoint, like, there are dudes on the mound that don't feel good mechanically and are, like, not confident in their shit or in their stuff. But you can't really tell. And, like, I think it's sometimes, like, if you're, like, really watch the game and, like, see, like, if he's not spotting that curveball. But it's hard to, like, on TV, it's so easy to tell. But, like, when you're actually playing the game, it's hard to, like, notice that kind of stuff.
At the end of the day, man, hitters are supposed to fail. You know, like, Mike Trout's the best hitter that walks the earth, and he still fails, like, 67% of the time, if not more than that, you know? So,
it's almost like a kicker, you know? Like a pitcher coming in relief or closing, you know, like, they screw up, then they're going to get all the blame regardless of what happened, you know, the previous nine innings. Where a hitter, you know, they're expected to fail, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Being a reliever is tough, man. It's like an offensive lineman. Like, nobody talks about you unless you just really, really did something bad, you know?
Right.
Kicker's a good example as well. Like, yeah, that's, and yet they're the nastiest pitchers that walk the earth. I mean, the bullpen guys now are so dominant, man. You know, every single one of them throws 95. Now and stuff, you know, as you see, the Royals started doing it back when they were winning the World Series, yeah. And a lot of teams have followed suit. We do it, you know, we starters get through five, six is great, but we're going to turn it over to our guys that throw 95 and they're going to close the door for us. Mm-hmm. All right. So, one thing that's already always interests me, Belly, is how guys pick their walkout songs. Mm-hmm. I lived with Seager for 2 years, and man, that kid would just kill himself over his walkouts. Really? It's wild, man. And he wants it to be country so bad, and we'd ride home together, and he would just listen to like 50 different country songs. He'd be like, do you like this one? And I'd be like, I mean, yeah, it sounded like the other one. He's like, okay, well, what about this one? I'd be like, I don't know, you know, like, and he would just like kill himself over it. I mean, my walkout in college was a Pocket Full of Sunshine.
Oh God.
So, that shows you how much swagger I have. So, I was just curious, man, how do you pick yours? You went with Hotel California this year. To me, it doesn't seem like that's the kind of music that you would jam to. Maybe it is, but just curious how you choose your walkout.
No, I definitely do not jam to that kind of music, but I think I came across that song somehow on my phone during a flight. And when you're listening to music on a flight, you're really bored. So I think you really like understand music a little more, maybe. I don't know.
Very true.
I really like that song. And I heard it before, but I didn't really know who sang it. Found out it was the Eagles. Added it to my playlist. And like all offseason, I just listened to it because I really enjoyed it. And then first week of spring training, we have music during batting practice. And that song actually came on. And our hitting coach, Brownie, was right next to me. I was like, Brownie, I'm thinking about doing this song at this point. What do you think? And he's like, yeah, I think that could work on Dodgers, you know, big stereo. And tried it during the freeway series. And I liked it. And so I kept it. But I think you just find finding a song with a cool, you know, 7 seconds.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do on that situation. I think I would be like Seeker, because I would be freaking out. I would really want to have it right. Have y'all heard Yu Darvish's? He's got a Crank
what
That
is
Soldier
it?
Boy.
Well, yeah, I've heard the song.
Yeah, but he has that because it goes, you.
Oh, who does?
Darvish.
Oh, Darvish? Yeah,
oh,
he had
yeah,
that
yeah,
with
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was sick, to be honest. Yeah, I love that. I thought that was
really cool. Yeah, so that's part of the battle is you try and find something that pumps yourself up, but a lot of it is trying to get the fans involved too. You know, like
that's why Verdugo does that one song.
Yeah,
I don't know what it is.
Verdugo is Mexican, but he's from Tucson. He doesn't speak a lick of Spanish, but he picked a Hispanic song. I think it's a Mexican like drinking song, and when it plays, the whole crowd gets hyped up. So you think it's like everyone's like stoked that Verdugo's batting, which I mean he's raking, so they probably are, but it's like the song is like the song of like the drinking song of Mexico, you know, so people just get all fired up.
Nice. As far that's as a good Verdugo play
here, yeah good, definitely
that's a really good play by him, just faking the fans out a little bit. They probably all come up to him and talk and speak Spanish and he doesn't know a lick of it.
Yeah. I think that probably does happen.
So speaking of video games, we were talking about how good Griffey was. Are you, you mentioned you play a bunch. Like, do you use that to kind of decompress, or you just use it just for fun, or like, have you always been a gamer? Because I'm not a big gamer, so I really never. I guess I suck. I don't play Fortnite. I don't watch Game of Thrones. Maybe I just suck. This is going to turn into a therapy.
I've always played video games. I played Call of Duty. I can't remember what year Call of Duty was really good. But the last, like, 4 years, I would play Call of Duty, and then Fortnite came out, and I started playing Fortnite with my friends. And I think Fortnite is the most fun game, you know, in the world. Until, like, everyone started getting really good. Like, I think the game of Fortnite now is the hardest game in the world. Yeah. Because everyone, like, you look on Instagram, they're just, like, they know how to build. They know how to edit the walls. And me, I just like shooting people, and I don't know how to build and edit. So it's like, now I just have fun playing it. I don't really win any more games. But at one point, I was for sure addicted to Fortnite during the offseason.
I was, so I was living with Seager last year, like I said, and he was a Fortnite guy. We were both hurt, you know, especially him all season, me down the stretch. And we would come home and just hop on the sticks and play Fortnite, man. It'd be like you, me, Singrani, Seager. And the thing, we were okay. And then, dude, I just didn't get any better, or everyone else got better. And it wasn't any fun for me anymore because I couldn't kill anybody. So you said you're not a gamer, Cooper, but like, if you think about Call of Duty, let's say you turn a corner and a dude's right there, it's just a battle, you know, like you're just going to hack at each other and someone's going to die. Fortnite, you turn a corner and someone's right there, you're like, yeah, let's start shooting. And all of a sudden this dude's 16 stories high on a wood fence shooting down at you. And you're like, what just happened? Yeah, and you're just dead, you know? So I never really took the time to get any better. So then it became no fun.
Yeah.
And I haven't played probably since last September, but I know there's still obviously just a ton of people that play.
So apparently Mike Evans, Bucks wide receiver, we had him on the podcast, but apparently he's a great Fortnite player. So you may need to link up with him, Cody, and test your skills out. Because he's one of the guys, I love Mike, but he's one of the guys that posts, like, every time he wins, he posts on his story.
I feel bad joining people that are good because I literally hold them back. I just bring nothing to the table. So
I'm the same. I'm the guy. They're like fighting 3-on-4, and I'm the fourth guy over cutting down trees, like trying to catch up. Like,
you're the guy that's trying to get out of the corner all the time. You're just like in the stuck in the corner.
I'll hide in a bush for a while and pop out. Yeah.
Is that the strategy, to just wait it out?
No, if you're nasty, you just go kill people.
Yeah.
You know,
for us, if we want a chance to actually win, but it's not really fun sitting there. Yeah.
Why the hell is there not a Game of Thrones game yet?
I guess you got to get the licensing and all that stuff. I'm sure it's coming. I don't know what you. I guess you can just do like White. Yeah, because there's a Walking Dead game. You know, you could essentially be that. You just fight in White Walkers. I don't know.
So. Moving on, we had Ross posted on his Instagram to get some questions from some fans that wanted to ask you some stuff. So one of the first things we got, and we got this a lot, but there was a ton of Marvel questions about the Avengers movie. So if you haven't seen the movie, here's a spoiler. Also, I'm not an Avengers guy, so I really suck. do you have a favorite superhero, or what would your superpower be?
Is time traveling a superpower?
Yeah, that'll play. Yeah.
I think I would want to time travel. I think that'd be really cool. But, like, my favorite, I have not seen the Avengers either. I've seen Iron Man. Is Batman even in Avengers?
No, I think he's DC.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be talking about this because I'm not an Avengers guy either. The last one I saw was Iron Man 2, so I'm, like, 5 years behind at least. Me too.
I love the Iron Man movies. Yeah. I think, what's his face, a really good actor.
Robert Downey Jr. The Iron Man movies were cool. I'm not usually a superhero movie guy, but the Iron Man ones were actually enjoyable. But I don't think I would watch the Avengers. Sorry, Avengers fans.
It's 3 hours long too.
Is it
apparently
really?
It made like almost $2 billion in its opening box office. It's like 80% more than the next highest. Insane. Like it just blew insane. It away.
Well, don't you have to have watched like 18 movies to even understand what the hell's going on?
Probably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of characters in there I've never heard of.
All right, well, moving on from the Avengers.
Can we please stop talking about the Avengers?
What other people wanted to know. It's crazy, man. I mean, I probably got a couple hundred responses, and a lot of them were the same. So a lot of people wanted to know, what pitcher would you be most scared to charge the mound? Like, let's say you got hit whatever, and you're like, all right, this is my moment. I'm going to charge the mound. And you look up and you're like, wait, that's maybe not that guy.
Size-wise, probably Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
Respect-wise, probably Scherzer. He's also got two colored eyes.
Yeah.
So it brings into play.
Yeah, it's a tough look.
Yeah, I would just – I mean, I'm not the biggest guy either, so if I were to charge the mound, I'd have to be someone small. And then I don't even know what I would do, though. You know, like if do I kick or do I punch or do I tackle?
I've always thought the move would be, it's like an elementary school move where you hold something in your hand and you throw it up in the air so that they look at it and then you hit them right in the face.
Yeah, just pick up some chalk on the baseline, bring it up to the mound.
You can use your helmet.
Yeah.
Ross, pretty you need to stop giving like people tips. Mind,
I know.
Yeah, someone's going to use that against charged. You.
Well, I kind of did. Stanton almost came at me. No, that was not
Barnsley
fun.
Barnsley had your back.
Yeah, Barnsley. Yeah. Oh, man.
Who? What, is there a player on the Dodgers that you would least like to get in a fight with?
Used to be Puig, I would say.
Yeah. Probably Russell.
Oh, yeah. That's what you said, Ross, didn't you?
We call him the Muscle for a reason.
Very, very strong, but I think he knows like some secret stuff. Yeah. I got him knowing how to fight, you know?
He's got some darkness behind those eyes.
He might.
I think so, yeah.
He's a salty vet. He's got like 14 years in the big leagues. He's a catcher. He's seen it.
Yeah, he's done it all. Yeah. He's the man, though. He's awesome. Love Russ.
Now you're talking him up so he doesn't fight
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there a pitcher? We got this one a lot, too. Is there a pitcher in the league that you face that you think's the toughest or that gives you the most problems?
Definitely Max Scherzer. Again, I don't know. I think I put the ball in play maybe once or twice in 10 at-bats. Definitely got my number. He's literally got four pitches, and he can throw it whenever and wherever he wants. So it's like you can never sit on a pitch, and I don't know. He's just a really, really good pitcher. Like he just dominates out there.
He's got four elite pitches. And he's got the pitchability of like Zach Greinke, you know, like 2-1, he can throw anything he wants, and they're all, and it's all going to be big league elite pitches. And the other thing that's crazy about Scherzer is just like the kind of mantra he puts on the mound. Like, dude, he goes into like this aggressive mode where it's just, I mean, I've never seen anybody basically mother F Chase Utley. And he was screaming at Chase Utley to get in the box. Yeah. And that's like screaming at your elder. Yeah. You know, nobody does that in baseball. So, like, that's just the kind of, like, he just turns into an animal on the mound. So, you got to deal with that. Plus, then you got to deal with the stuff. So, luckily, I haven't had to hit off him yet. But, you know, I can bloop it over second base with the best of them. So, maybe I'll run into my path.
Are you pretty loose before games, Cody? Like, we were talking to Walker, and he was talking about how it was like a big adjustment for everyone around him because he was so loose before starts and stuff, and they didn't know how to react to it. Are you like pretty loose, or are you like lock in like Kershaw does or something?
I would say I'm pretty loose. I think like in the routine at home, it's easier because you know what to do. On the road, you don't have it. But like after the hot tub for me, it's like I get in my locker and I put on my headphones. And at that point, I try to lock it in, which is like 30 to 40 minutes before the game. Other than that, I think in batting practice and in the cage, I think I'm completely, you know, relaxed, which I think most people are. But I would say right before the game is when I tend to lock it in, which is, I think, normal.
Yeah, I would say most people are like that. Yeah. You know, you can't just be mute and just turned on from, you know, noon till 7. Yeah. You know, you got to be able to, you know, kick back And I think Cody's a little bit like me, where like that's not our personality. You know, if I were to show up and you know, be just crazy intense and all that, like that's not the way I am, and that's not really the way Cody is. So I think that what makes him great and others great is they have the ability to kind of, you know, be loose and have fun, and then you know, really turn it on when it counts. David Freese is a guy that really comes to mind. Like, David Freese is very happy-go-lucky and just, like, an awesome dude. But, like, when he steps in the box, I don't know if there's anybody that can focus more for, you know, 2 minutes than he can, which is why, obviously, you know, basically carried the Cardinals to a World Series, you know. So that's kind of what makes baseball players special, man, is we get a chance to really just kind of BS through the day. And then when the lights come on, you know, we can turn it on.
Yeah, that's kind of how Walker had mentioned it. He was like, you just kind of got to be yourself, because he tried to like be a hard ass for the first couple years, and he was like, man, it just just doesn't work for me until I started being myself and just relaxing is when I started playing better.
It's the best way to go about it, for sure. All right. Well, our last question from Instagram was, how do you feel about the shift? I always like asking hitters this one.
I honestly think that I have had decent success off the shift. But then again, when you hit a line drive up the middle or you hit like a line drive in the outfield grass and it's caught, like that's pretty deflating. Like yeah. That should be a hit 100% of the time, and it used to be a hit. So I think the shift's going to take some hits away, but it's going to give you hits as well. So it's like, I don't know the numbers between like if it's taking more away, if we got more hits. But obviously, I think that I would like it if there was no shift, because then it's very fair. But yeah, I don't know. I think I've gotten some hits because of the shift as well, though.
Yeah, I mean, was it your walk off against the Brewers last year in the NLCS? Wasn't that an opposite field to beat the shift, or am I mixed
at home? No, I pulled it through the four hole.
Okay, so now.
So if there was a shift,
I'm thinking of a bunch of times where you've been able to like two strike approach, like punch it where the shortstop would be.
Yeah,
you know, but there's not a lot of guys that can do that. Like that's a testament to your ability to make two strike adjustment. You know. As a pitcher, I love it. I don't throw very hard, and I pound lefties in, so they pull it a lot. Mm-hmm. So it gets me a lot of outs, but I would definitely understand that if I hit a laser into the outfield and for some reason the second baseman standing 160 feet away in shallow right, that would be that would be upsetting. Mm-hmm.
As a fan, it kind of, you know, it sucks. It totally,
yeah,
I think it totally turns us off. I mean, you know, I'm mixed on it because like every other sport, like you can use like strategy to face your opponent. Like, you know, you can double team in basketball. You can double team on an elite receiver in the red zone. But so like I get your ability. I guess you should be able to. But man, it can be very, very frustrating. Like watching a game, like you said, Cody, see it come off the bat. You know, it's a good hit. In any other situation, that's a hit. And then it's a straight line out. And that sucks.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll see. I think there's going to be some changes coming rather soon. I don't know what changes, but we'll see what they want to do.
Yeah, it's constantly being talked about as like Coop. They're thinking about not being able to put like let's say a lefty's up. You can't put the shortstop on the other side of second base.
Yeah, you just got to have like maybe three guys on each side of the field or something.
Like I just think the infielder should have to stay on the dirt. Like no infielder should be allowed in the grass. Like
I agree with that.
You want to put four infielders on the right side, just keep them in the dirt.
Yeah.
I mean, like you at least got to have like shortstop, third base, you know, on the same side of the field and then your outfielder on the same side of the field. But like,
yeah,
I mean, they could shift as far as they want over to second base, but to come all the way over and basically be playing second base, that sucks.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Bizarre.
Yeah. It's so weird to watch because as kids, it just wasn't like that. I wonder, when did that start? I mean,
it's so hard to hit in the big leagues. Yeah. You got numbers where you hit the ball, percentages, and they just play where you hit them. So hard.
Yeah.
And you face nasty stuff. People don't understand, really. They really don't.
Well, that's all we got, man. I just want to thank Cody for taking the time this morning and, you know, taking the time out of his day to come hang out with us here at the Big Swing in San Francisco. We're going to go take on the Giants for the next three games. And, man, thanks for coming to do this, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun. Definitely.
Yeah, thanks, Cody. It was good meeting you.
Nice to meet you, too.